Hey, everybody, it's Kevin and it's Donna, and welcome to the third episode of The Med List. Donna, how has your holiday season started so far? And are you really excited for us to talk to people about exercise during the holidays?
Absolutely, me included. I decided to try something new too. I'm learning Tai Chi, and so we're going to give that a try.
Oh man, I'm super excited. Well, we'll get things bumping here, and I will start it off with our intro. Hey, everybody, if you are tuning in and you are tuning after this event, you'll realize, hey, this must have happened somewhere around Thanksgiving. I just have eaten the Thanksgiving dinner, the second plate, the third plate, and the leftover, you know, for a bit. And they're delicious. But the exercise piece is so essential, Donna. And I think that oftentimes we think, you know what, exercise can be a nice addition, right? As pharmacists, for our backgrounds, we can think, yeah, that'd be great. We'll always recommend exercise and nutrition. And then what ends up happening is we don't go any further than saying those words and recognizing there can be problems and there can be benefits. So I'm super excited for the guest coming because we've talked to her before. Jen, how are you, Donna? What's been new? What's been exciting?
Oh my gosh, there's so much exciting and new. And so I've been working on my MedStrong workbook, which will hopefully be out by the end of this year, so that folks can really not only exercise to, but they can deprescribe with the MedStrong workbook and really be able to move forward in helping those that they, you know, care for or for themselves.
Beautiful. Awesome. No, I think that workbook's going to be so helpful, just like I think Janet's going to be so helpful for us for the conversation. So audience, if you are on the patient side or you're on the clinician side, really the conversation today is boiled around these things, no pun intended with boiled eggs, is looking at decreasing your total medication burden overall, which you guys know that Don and I are all about optimization of med regimens. But sometimes your meds can prevent you from exercising. It can be problematic. And sometimes by decreasing your number of medications, it can help you exercise. On the flip side, by increasing the amount of exercise you do, sometimes we can get rid of medications that we no longer need because we're able to treat diseases with just that exercise. And speaking of treat the diseases with just that exercise, we have an incredible guest, if you'll introduce her first.
Yeah, of course. So, hi, Janet. We have Janet with us today, and welcome to the Med List. I'm so happy you can join us. And so Janet and I have been friends for over 20 years. And like we've said before, we've walked many steps, many miles with our kids, without our kids. chance we could get for many years. So in part of what we've done is learn from each other through the years about medicines on my side and exercise from Janet's side. So it's, you know, 20 years later, here we are, and we're finally sharing the wealth of what we've learned and have known for 20 plus years, and now we're able to disseminate it for all of those listening. So it's really exciting for me to be able to do this. And Kevin, just as having Janet on our show, I just think it's perfect and perfect timing, like you said, right at the holiday season when we're all going, oh boy.
It's always a good time to have Janet on our show.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always a good time to exercise.
Always. It doesn't matter what the day is. And don't start on, you know, you don't have to wait till Monday to start either. You can start any day you want. I always love that.
Janet, for the audience, so that they know a little bit, like if they've never come across an exercise physiologist and the amount of like education that you have and what you do in your clinical role, can you describe that a little bit as you kind of intro yourself and tell us more?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a clinical exercise physiologist. So an exercise physiologist is somebody who studies what happens in the body during exercise. A clinical exercise physiologist studies what happens in the body with exercise when there's a disease present or a medical issue or something. How can it help? How does it need to be modified? So how can it be used to be treat, but also how is it used to modify? So very similar to medications, right? That you need to know how to use it well. You can't just say, here, go exercise. And I always say, like, you know, if people say, just move more, be more physically active, it's like telling somebody, go eat, go take medications, you know, like that's not going to work. We need a lot of details. And so that's what a clinical exercise physiologist does, is holds those details and that information about how to do it well, which is why I call my company Exercising Well, because it's not enough to just exercise. We need to know how to do it well. And that takes a lot of mindfulness, a lot of understanding about your own body and how to listen to it and how to move the way your body's designed. So that's what I do. And then I'm also a health coach, and that made my job so much easier because it helped me understand the motivation piece. And I love to combine motivation and mindfulness and movement into one simple message of how to exercise well and be well now.
I love it, Janet. So when it comes to, I guess, the clients that you're kind of seeing, we can skip the holiday jokes for now, but the clients that you're seeing on a regular basis, Janet, that are coming into you that usually have a somewhat complex medication regimen, let's say they've got more than three medications on board, and some of them may be problematic. Where do you start, Janet? Like, where do you start when someone's got medications on board, they've got disease states that you feel can be helped by exercise? Where do you go next other than you and Donna having a wonderful conversation?
The place I start is their why, their core why, I call it. Not just their why, like I want to be healthy, I don't want to have diabetes, you know, all of that. But I have a process for getting to their core why. I want to be healthy so that I can fill in the blank. You know, it might be, I want to be able to play with my kids. I want to be around for my grandkids. I want to be that really cool grandma that's up and down on the floor. I want to be able to travel, hike, you know, but it takes a while to get to that. It takes a little conversation and a few questions. Once we get to that level, now we've tapped into their natural motivation. We all want to be healthy, right? And it's a kind of a no-brainer. But until we get to that kind of clarity, imagining yourself playing with your grandkids, imagining yourself hiking at 70, you know, walking on the beach at 80 with your husband, things like that. I think that it just becomes this checklist, like, yes, I'm supposed to exercise, you know, which is why we joke about exercising over the holidays. like it seems like, oh, I have enough to do. Why would I exercise? But when it's about feeling and functioning better now than you want to. So that's where I start, is the core why. I think that that's really the essence of it. And then from there, we can start building a program based on that. When I look at a lot of medications, I might start talking about, okay, what is getting in the way of that? What is preventing you? It might be dizziness, right? Because they're on a blood pressure medication that leaves them dizzy when they stand up. It might be a history of falls, and they're worried about falling. They're worried about injury, back pain, knee pain, a lot of chronic pain issues that I really have a soft spot for. I feel bad for people in chronic pain, especially because it's just a spiral of inflammation.
I love that you start with the why, Janet, and that you said the word spiral right there, because, you know, Adana, yeah, there is adherence issues with medications, and all you have to do with them is oftentimes take them during a certain time of the day, put them in your mouth, get a little bit of water and swallow them. And yet across the United States, chronic conditions, medication adherence is 50% or less, depending on the study you're looking at, and depending on the medication. And the reasons why can be a myriad, but they are so much easier, right, than starting an exercise program or regimen in someone's mind, right, to be able to get that element put into place. And so the fact that Janet starts with the why on, you have to find, in motivational interviewing terms, like what is the like cognitive dissonance element on why you are not doing what you should be doing to be healthier, right? And what are the motivations to change that behavior? But you and I deal with that all the time with medications that are so simple to take. Do you ever run across that, Donna, that you're just thinking, how can I get that patient to the next step of taking those medications? And on the opposite side, as a patient, do you ever think, why can't I just take my multivitamin or do those other things that are necessary for me to stay healthy?
Yeah, of course. I have to say, before I started down the deprescribing world kind of side of things, I was really all about adherence to medications and in trying to teach people on adherence. And the World Health Organization even states that adherence is extremely important, and our non-adherence is an epidemic, basically, just like polypharmacy is an epidemic. So it is, it's a worldwide problem. It's not just here. It's not just one culture or whatever. It's people in general. It's the psyche, I guess, if you will, of putting in that value, like Janet said. So yes, I've seen that as quite an issue. And so what boggles my mind at times is when we talk about deprescribing, you know, not only are there barriers to adherence, now we have barriers to deprescribing. We want to take that off, you know, like, and if you're like, no, can't do that. It's like, well, wait, I guess you're one of the adherent ones, you know, like, who am I dealing with? So it can be kind of funny. Like, you really have to, like you're saying, Janet, is figure out, you know, what's important to this person, and is taking this medication important to this person or not. And I think the other important part about all of these things that we're talking about, the exercise and the meds that people are taking, when you got to be honest, our patients, people out there that are listening in, you got to be honest with what you're taking and how you're taking it, because otherwise we can't help you. We're going to have more difficult time trying to be like, gosh, why is that blood pressure not coming down? Like, you tell me you're exercising, you tell me you're taking your meds, and yet you're still registering really high blood pressure. So now we want to add on more, right? We want to add on more medicines. So are you really adherent? And I think that that's super important, is the honesty part of it, which also is not easy for folks. And Janet, if I can just take one quick backtrack of what you said and the why. I don't know if you remember this, but years and years ago, I used to have my treadmill in my living room with all of my family pictures right smack in front of me. And I'd run every morning, especially in the dead of winter, because it was too cold to be outside. And I would run on that treadmill looking at my why. So she taught me this years and years ago, and so be it. Yeah.
I love that. I love that.
Front and center. I love it. So after you've established that, then, Janet, with the motivation of the individual on what is their why, and now they have an idea of, here's my why, here's some motivation to do something new. They know that, you know, one common issue that Donna alluded to there is sometimes deprescribing is difficult because something worked, or at least they had a feeling that something worked for them. And now when you're pulling off that medication, it feels like there's no other options available and you're giving up on them, right?
Yeah.
And so I feel like that can be a real point of a sticking point, where oftentimes working with an clinical exercise physiologist can be a big deal to be able to say, we're not giving up. There are other options and they don't have to be drugs. Where do you take it from there, Janet?
Yeah. It's so interesting because as you're saying that, it's almost like we have the same problem with exercise, but in the opposite way, like they don't want to give up what they used to be able to do. And I think that's one of the biggest barriers, is meeting yourself where you are. So that would be the next step, is like really meeting yourself where you are. People are like, well, I just have to get back to what I used to do. I know I just have to push myself to do it. And it's like people just want to jump over there and they don't want to give up what they used to do when, Donna, you say this all the time, right? Like, that medication might not work for you anymore. It worked 10 years ago. It might not still be working. Your body changed, everything changed. And same thing for exercise. What worked before isn't necessarily going to work now. And we need to, and that's where I think mindfulness is so important. And an essential piece of mindfulness is self-compassion. It's really hard to be in a body that can't do what you want it to do, especially when it's something that important to you and something that you self-identify with. I find this is hardest for people who used to be athletes, who are used to that no pain, no gain, push through, and they're used to being very physically capable, and now they can't. And so there's a lot of emotion in that. So I think meeting yourself where you are with kindness and compassion and mindfulness, and say, okay, what can my body do now, rather than what did it used to do? And what do I need to be able to do to be able to get to that why? And so, but being right here, right now, present. And it's hard for people. I use a lot of empathy with people to say, yeah, that must have been hard. What did you learn from the past? What can we, and where do you want to go now? And so I look at levels of mobility, strength, and stamina. Those are the three skills that our body needs. So I put them in those categories and make sure that we've got a balance of those three. And how much mobility do you have right now? You know, or is there stiffness? Is there lack of balance, agility, those kind of things, to feel safe as you move? Oftentimes that's the first place we start. And they often think, well, I just have to walk. But I think starting with some mindful stretching breaks throughout the day when I do that with people, their pain levels automatically start to go down. And then they feel more hopeful that they could actually do more. Because mindful movement, when it's science-based, is an anti-inflammatory. When exercise and movement is not science-based and mindful, it can be a pro-inflammatory. So when it's painful and exhausting, it's a pro-inflammatory. So being very aware of how does that exercise affect you? And then getting back some strength is the next thing, because most people will lose strength when they're sick. They're laying down 24 hours of bed rest and you start to lose muscle. So, and then we work on stamina. But I look at those three things and quickly, what do you have now? What's getting in the way? What needs to come first? So you feel safe moving.
Perfect. What are the three things you look at, Donna? Are there things you looked at on the opposite side of the fence?
Yeah. So, and I think that they really compare too, because, that I'm always looking at the number of medications people are taking, and then that anticholinergic burden and the AC burden. What are this grouping of side effects that really causes a lot of difficulty for people in regards to dizziness and unsteadiness and gait issues, dry mouth, dry eyes, constipation, and then tachycardia and falls. So there's so much that are happening with this. So when we have an increased anticholinergic burden, there tends to be increased issues with the patient, and certainly a tremendous, like as we spoke before, a spiral of things that are forthcoming. And then the other thing we look at is frailty. When we're looking at where people are at, I think it really shows this overlapping between our two worlds, Jana, in regards to, looking at someone's frailty, and that can change, right? And you're looking at someone's coming to you and saying, I want to be able to do this that I did 10 years ago. And you're going, look, where are you at right now? And where can we get you? It might not be that, but we can get you closer to that. We can improve these scores. We can improve frailty scores. We can improve anticholinergic burden and the number of meds that people are taking. And then with all of this, right, we're improving their ability to be able to exercise, to optimize not only their meds, but to optimize their bodies and their body function in general, and stamina and mobility and strength, like you spoke of.
What are the meds in particular, Donna, that you sometimes think about if you know someone is going to start exercising and you're hoping that they can start exercising for their overall benefit? What are some meds in particular that you go, I want to make sure that we're addressing these and the side effects that they can cause or the issues they can cause that may prevent individuals from exercising safely or effectively?
Yeah. So, thinking about a lot of the medications that might have some type of effect on their central nervous system or CNS, for example. So thinking about muscle relaxants for one thing, you're not going to, get that strength probably that you need or the coordination. You're just too relaxed, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And they have a high anticholinergic burden. Sleep medications, things that help us sleep at night, can make us groggy all day long, especially things like diphenhydramine, otherwise known as Benadryl. Those are your PM meds, your Tylenol PMs and Advil PMs. That's an issue for sure. And those also high anticholinergic burden. And, I always find this really difficult to explain to people. And when I'm doing med reviews, it's such a catch-22, because antidepressants can cause you to have an increased risk of falls, and they have anticholinergic burden associated with them. But also depression makes you not want to exercise. So that's one of those catch-22. And so finding the medication within the antidepressants that is the least amount of anticholinergic burden tends to be more important. So sertraline would be a better product than, say, something like amitriptyline or paroxetine. So those are some of the better things that we want to be looking at. So those are some of the heavy hitters, if you will. Janet, you talked about like pain and things that affect our central nervous system. So, the opioids and the tramadols and gabapentin and other medications that we might be using for pain are also going to influence how we're able to move and be.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting to go through that entire list and realize that it's huge. Like, there are a number of medications that impact exercise, and it needs a thorough review to make sure that things are working well for patients. Yeah. And it can be rather confusing because some things you would think, well, this is good for my heart. Beta blocker, for example, like this is working for me well. And then you go and try to exercise. And if you have diabetes or another disease state that the beta blocker could be blocking some signs of hypoglycemia or just decreasing your overall cardiac output, that you're not able to exercise to the level you want to and get frustrated, not recognizing that drug is preventing you from exercising the way you want to, can be difficult. So I love that you cover that. And Janet, on the opposite side, I think that this is a good one for myself, and I hope for our audience. When it comes to the disease states that you kind of look at and you just check off in your mind, like, this can benefit from exercise, this can significantly benefit from exercise, and we might not even think it. Like, we're thinking immediately, what is the drug I'm going to take to treat this? What are the things that come to your mind where exercise can be not only essential, but even more beneficial than pharmaceutical intervention?
I think because exercise affects the whole, when you do it mindfully, right? And you do it so it leaves you feeling and functioning well, it's connected to that core why, and it's like this whole person approach. It can restore the belief in your whole person. So if you're taking a medication, and I know that there's been studies that look at this, when somebody takes a medication, they do exercise and meds, or they just do exercise for depression. And the ones who just exercise did the best long-term, they kept it up long-term. And the theory was that the people who exercised and had medications on board thought it was the medication that were doing it, didn't think that they were making the difference, right? But I think just exercise empowers you to be the CEO of your well-being. It empowers you to say, I'm taking charge of this. It's not just this passive pill that I'm taking, right? That's doing it for me. I'm doing this. And I think that when you have any medical issue, any at all, you start to stop believing in your body. You feel like your body's working against you. And then we feel very fragmented. And once you stop believing in your body, you stop listening to it. And when you stop listening to your body, you miss out on a lot of good information that you need for everything, whether it's telling about side effects of medication or if exercise is working or not, increasing inflammation, lowering it. So we need to be embodied. And that's what exercise can do for you, if you're willing to listen to it and meet yourself where you are. So I think that it's really anything. It takes a rethinking of the word exercise. I think that's really important because all these studies that look at different exercise or just call it physical activity or movement, we need to be very specific. Exercise means to practice. So it doesn't mean you have to go to the gym and you got to do 30 minutes or you got to burn this many calories or you got to sweat. It's just, how are you moving to practice and give your body what it needs to feel and function better? And so the more that you connect it to your why, well, if I want to walk on the beach with my husband, I need to be steady. So I think I'll do some balance movement so that as I'm walking on the beach, I'll be steady. And that can be done in 1 minute bounce throughout the day. And that is exercise. When you add mindfulness to it, those 1 minute bouts then take you out of the stress state. And now you're in a state where your energy is going into healing and repairing. So you're helping your meds work better when you're not moving in a stress state. But unfortunately, a lot of our mindsets about exercise keep people in a stress state. They ignore their body. They push through pain. They do too much too soon. And we're counteracting everything else that we're trying to do for our health, like eat healthy and take medications, when we're in a chronic stress state. So the number one thing that I think exercise can do for us and is the only thing that can do it is mindful movement clears the stress state. If you think differently and you distract yourself from the stress, your body is still ready to move. But moving intentionally clears that ready to move tension. That is the stress state, fight, freeze. So we need movement that makes us feel better now to get out of that chronic stress state so that our medical treatments can work better. And that's, to me, is exercising well. That's the true meaning of the word exercise, to be healthy.
Amazing. So you mentioned rethinking how you move, right? And I'm always like rethinking the meds that you take. So again, another overlap of our messaging and how things change, but we can still optimize, right? We can still be by rethinking and retooling, or, you know, thinking about our med list, thinking about the exercise we do and what's going to benefit us, even at that time. So, you know, like, so think about it, Jan. I know you work a lot with people who have had a setback, like a health mm-hmm. setback, and then they want to start to, you know, regain some strength mm-hmm. and, you know, start to exercise again. And I think about, like, you know, after surgery or something, you can't move like you used to. And I even think about that on the day of, right? You go in, you're feeling pretty good into the surgery, and then you leave and you're like, oh my gosh, I need crutches, or I need, you know, I have to be careful because I just had, you know, this knee worked on, or this hip, or, you know, whatever. And you don't feel as good, right? You don't feel as good leaving. You know, there's a road ahead of you. And I think that that's an important thing to be thinking about, is that you're not going to literally, quote unquote, bounce right back as soon as you're leaving there. But what can you do to move to make that better? And I think that if we haven't exercised in some time, we got to do this slowly and increase slowly and work through it. And really, when we have this huge list of meds, right, and we're trying to deprescribe, you're not just going to, you know, oh, stop all of it or whatever. You got to do it slowly and figure out, you know, that pause or what we're going to try and see what you need or don't need. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's a lot of similarities here and parallels with the work that we do.
There really is. And it's based on the principles of how the body works, right? Like, I always use plants as an analogy, because you wouldn't plant a tree and be like, oh, it didn't grow yet. I can't believe I watered it. I gave it lots of water. And you expect it to grow and produce fruit. We wouldn't expect that from a plant or a tree. And we expect it from our bodies all the time. And the principle, there's a very important principle of exercise training, which is gradual progression. And it's there, it's a principle, because it's how our body works. And the same thing, yeah, with changing meds or changing anything or recovering, it's gradual, which is why I think mindfulness works so well. When I can get people to use mindfulness, they're like, okay, I can just be how I am now. I can listen to my body. And it's very empowering for them to be able to go through being limited, but be calm and peaceful about it and know that they can do what they can and what they're doing is enough.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about that trust factor. I feel like we put so much trust in our medications, right? You have this box that you have that's pristine, and you're laying them out every single week because they're going to create a miracle for you every time you take them. Like, we have this level of trust in these chemicals, which we shouldn't. You know, overall, the medications we're taking, the trust we should have is in the monitoring that's necessary to make sure that they're working well. On the opposite end, the trust for our own bodies, understanding what it's telling us and that we can actually heal ourselves, is very limited in modern day society. And you said a couple things there, Janet, that I thought that is very Eastern medicine-like, is what Janet is using there, that we have those principles put in place of trusting what our bodies are telling us and that our bodies can recover. How have you helped folks over the years with just that, that what seems very small, but is a giant leap from going, I can't do this myself, I need a drug to help me so I can immediately feel better, to helping them recognize, I can let my body tell me what I need to have done, and I can let my body heal itself by doing X, Y, and Z things.
Yeah, it's hard to put into words, but I can say that, like, I had a patient who came in, she was a dancer, she you know, was very physically active, gained weight, has chronic pain, and I showed her how to get up out of a chair in the science-based way, mechanically, how to do it the way that she could be strongest. And she literally cried because she didn't have pain when she got out of the chair. And it was, and, you know, when we reviewed it, I said, you're just listening and adjusting and to using these adjustments. And I said, wow, how does that feel? She goes, I have hope. I am leaving here with hope. I came in here hopeless, and I'm leaving here with hope. And I think that's the biggest word that most people use, is that I feel hopeful now. And with just a few minutes of teaching them how to move their body the way it's designed, teaching them how to listen to and respect what their body's telling them right now, And to know that even if they do that in small bouts, to trust that process, that their body can't help but get stronger if they practice that regularly. It can't help but get better at it. It's just how it's designed. It reinstalls hope in them. And with that hope, you can do anything, you know, and you can then believe, okay, yeah, this medication can help me, right? I'm sure that you guys see it when you explain to somebody how a medication is helping them, somebody maybe who is resistant, and you explain to them how it's working in their body and how it's filling a deficit that isn't there. You guys probably see the same thing, right?
Yeah. Especially just like correct use, you know, like how somebody should be taking something with an inhaler, or why they're taking a certain type of inhaler, especially with somebody having breathing issues like COPD. And we explain that, oh, you're taking this inhaler because it's drying up those secretions. And they're like, oh, I didn't realize that. I'm like, yes. And that's why you want to take this particular inhaler. And they've abandoned it because they can't feel it. You know, they can't necessarily feel it working like a quick rescue inhaler. And it's like, no, you need that, because otherwise, you know, then you end up here if you don't use it. You end up with pneumonia and various things like that. And you're right, because they're like, oh, now I get it. And so
the best moment.
It is. And it's like, uh-huh. So what are you going to do when you leave here? What are you going to take? You know?
Yeah. And then they're automatically motivated, right? They're like, oh, of course I'm going to do that. Like, I find it all the time with people with diabetes.
Yeah.
When I explain to people what happens in their body when they're exercising to their blood sugars, that movement is using up the sugar in their blood system, taking it out of their blood system where they measure it from their blood and put it in the cells to be used, not to be stored as fat like insulin puts it in, you know, and that it helps everything work better. They're like, oh, no one ever explained that to me before. I need to go exercise, you know? And you know, you've tapped into that one missing piece of information that they really needed to see the value. Yeah.
I love that. And I think that the options, like folks feeling like they have options when it comes to medications, is huge. You know, they have their own, because we were using a phrase of adherence or compliance previously, and we've shifted over to a phrase called congruence, right? We're trying to have some level of shared decision-making capacity between the clinician and the patient so that they can feel like they can embody their own treatment kind of experience and journey. When we say the word exercise, Janet, like I feel like there's an interesting stereotype that pops up in your head that looks like dumbbells and a mirror and you're and you're a muscle bound middle-aged or younger individual doing so. I pulled up a study that I was just going to flash in front of the audience real quickly here. And this study, Janet and I were talking about off screen. It's out of Shanghai. And I know there's a lot of little letters inside of here, but this is really breaking down all the diseases and all the types of exercises that can benefit those individual disease states. So one thing, Janet, I'd love to hear your thoughts on a little bit further is these types of exercises, like the number of types of exercises and the amount of choice that an individual has when it comes to what exercises do they want to participate in. I feel like we can really paint a much larger picture for our audience to understand. And I'd love for you to either give some examples of patients and what you've done to connect their, you know, previous life experiences to their exercise, or just the way you go about it.
Yeah, thank you so much for bringing that up, Kevin, because it's so true. I think it's one of the biggest barriers to exercising is that stereotype of what it means to exercise. Or like I said before, the generalization of just go move. And then I think I shared this slide. I don't know if you can pull it up, but it's kind of an image of that I see a lot, is that people either are not exercising and they're aging really fast. But then there's a group of people who are like, I exercise, I walk, I get my 10,000 steps a day. And they're aging, you know, maybe they last a little longer, but they're still aging really fast, because really aging is loss of mobility and strength. Those are the two big things that we lose as we age. And if we're not doing something to get those back proactively, very specifically, that makes a big difference. But what I love about that is that it gives you options, right? When people who I see, especially if they're carrying extra weight, they think, oh, I can't walk, so I can't exercise. Oh my gosh, there's so many other things you can do. And when I say all the things, like that woman who was a dancer, and we talked about doing chair dancing or seated aerobics or seated dancing, and she was so excited when I showed these videos that were just dancing in a chair. She's like, oh, that will be so fun. And she was all excited. So yeah, connecting what somebody says, oh, I used to love this, it made me feel so alive. Okay, let's bring that back in. Or I love to be outside, or I love to do this. We try and bring in those elements so that they get that feeling again, even if they're not doing the same exact thing. So I try and tie it to what they really love and what they enjoy and what kind of lights them up. But two, I lay out the, okay, we have strength, stamina, and mobility. So you have three options of what you can actually start with. We want to eventually have a balance of those three in the right balance, but you can start with any one of those, whichever one feels like it would be the easiest to start with and feel the best for you. But then in that, then you have options of frequency, intensity, duration, that you could do it small bouts throughout the day. You could do it every other day. You could do it for 1 minute. You could do it for 5 minutes. So I like to give ranges, right? For instance, for strength training, you could do 1 to 3 sets of 8 to 12 or even 6 to 12, 4 to 12 repetitions at either a level that's just muscle memory with very light resistance. So you're building the muscle memory. You could do a power set where you're doing kind of quick with a little moderate weight, or you could do a really heavier weight, nice challenge. So you've got all kinds of variables there that you can play with. So you can flex your exercise based on how you feel today. And I ask people to do a mindful check-in. How's your energy? How's your pain? And then as you start to gradually increase your movement, is it increasing my energy and is it decreasing my pain? And that way you're personalizing it for that moment, for what your body needs right then and there. And so that way, when you know those variables to play with, and you know you can meet yourself where you are, oh, I woke up with a lot of pain. Yeah, I did a lot of gardening yesterday. I'm in so much pain. Okay, I need exercise to be an anti-inflammatory. I'm going to do some mindful range of motion stuff and just check in. How is that helping my pain right now? Oh, it's going down. Okay, good. I think I'll, keep going. Oh, the pain's starting to increase. I think I'll take a little break and maybe come back again later. So you can start playing with it and personalize it based on energy and pain, because it's telling you whether it's being a pro-inflammatory and anti-inflammatory. So use those three types, those different variables, and you've got a menu or a template that you can use so exercise can be a resource to feel better rather than a burden or a should, something that you got to just check off and do.
I want to steal some of your time here, Janet, for the audience, because I don't know about you guys, but I sit more than I ever have before, right? I'm just staring at a screen all the time. And so we've talked about disease states and really going like, hey, we've got to decrease the meds and we've got to increase the exercise. But when it comes to some choices, when it comes to postural related or ergonomic pain that's out there, Janet, any things that you'd like to educate the audience on when they're thinking, I just need to go to the medicine cabinet and grab that ibuprofen or other medication because my back hurts, my neck hurts, et cetera, how they can think differently instead of going, all I can think of with exercise is I can run, I can do this yoga thing, I can lift weights. What other ways do people need to recognize exercise can actually be a corrective mechanism for them?
Yeah. So the problem with sitting disease or sitting too long is we're just not meant to sit in chairs, first of all, right? We're not meant to, and I'm standing right now, but I have a sit-stand desk. So I go back and forth because I learned even standing for too long doesn't feel good. So we're not meant to be in one position for that long. We're not meant to be like focused on a computer. So that automatically kind of takes us out of alignment. And it's not bad. It's not bad posture, right? That tech neck, all those things that kind of, make it like this is wrong, this is bad. We make it more stressful. It's just normal. We're gonna gravity is just gonna pull us forward. It's not bad. We can just say, oh, you know what? I know how to get to my back to my natural alignment, which is just standing or sitting where you feel like your bones are holding you and it's kind of effortless and it feels effortless. And that's really where your body can rest. It doesn't take a lot of work to hold you up versus like overcorrecting military posture. Now your back muscles are turned on again. So just that natural alignment, kind of trusting, again, your bones to hold you, trusting your body to take care of you and getting back into this moment. So the problem with sitting for too long is one that we're still. So it's like water that sits still for a while, right? Things kind of start to grow there when there's no movement in the water. The fluids in our body, when things are still, things start to build up. Inflammation starts to build up, especially when we're stressed. Right. So we have meditation studies that people sit for meditation for 8 hours at a time and they are healthy. Right. So you could sit in meditation because you're not stressed. You're still, but you're not stressed. So it's not the stillness, it's the combination of stillness and stress. And again, stress is not a problem. It's just that we're focused, we're working, and I kind of end up in this position. So we get back into our alignment, first of all, to kind of get back in this moment, kind of make it easy for our body to move. And then you step away every hour or so and move because that's what's going to keep those fluids moving. Mindful movement is the antidote to sitting disease. And so we talk about getting steps, but I've seen people kind of marching and getting steps while they're working. We're just perpetuating stress, right? We're not curing the real root problem of sitting disease, which is stressed and still. So you might be moving, but you still got that stress equation. So I think stepping away, taking a break, kind of getting back into your body in this moment, and then moving everything, just go through every joint and move it mindfully in a range that is pain reducing or pain free, right? And go through every joint and just move it. And then you're clearing that stress, and then you step back in. It takes maybe a minute or two. And then you come back in, okay, now I've decreased inflammation, and then it'll build back up, and you get stress back to being a cycle rather than this. But I think the idea of steps and moving more and all of that and burning calories is making the problem worse. One, because it's a should, right? I should get this many steps. So that's stressful. And then the second one is that it's just adding to stress. It's not taking away the stress state. So yeah, so mindful movement breaks, I think that's exercise. My definition of exercise is moving for self-care. Anytime you're moving with the intention of I'm here to take care of your body, that's exercise.
Beautiful. That is so helpful, Jana. And for the audience, I did paste our study that we kind of talked about a little bit inside of the comment section there. And then we showed a graphic that was from Healthline on some of the medications that Donna had talked about that I'm putting in there as well. Donna, to close out the show, do you have any fantastic nuggets of wisdom?
So many. No, I just want to say thank you to Janet. Thank you so much. And I think the one thing that we really need to consider, and something that we had talked about ahead of time, is don't blame however you're feeling on either aging or, you know, I'm not doing, I should be doing kind of thing. Just know that there's action that can be taken. So if you're thinking like, oh, I'm unsteady or I'm not confident, like that's what I hear when people are over-medicated. Jen and I talked about this, and she gets that when people have had a setback. I'm not confident. Am I moving any longer? I'm scared about falling. So no matter what it is, we got to look at your meds. We got to look at your movement, and we can be med strong together and exercising well.
I love that. A huge thank Absolutely. You to you, Janet. We really appreciate you coming on and giving awesome. Some incredible perspective on things. The only takeaways for those patients out there that are listening, any folks really, are when it comes to the chicken and egg conversation, we didn't answer that. And we never will, because the reason is both sides matter to the equation. And it can really depend patient by patient, situation by situation. But decreasing those medications and making sure you're cognizant of the exercises that are going to be necessary for you to be better and improving along the way is huge. And the exact same can be said when it comes to increasing exercise and looking at the disease states that can be impacted by it. So I think there's some real benefits to all sides of the equation. But thank you once again, Janet. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of The Med List. We will talk to you soon.